And welcome, everybody, to another Strange Uncle's Oddities. So there's a couple. I want to cover this real quick. just being that the internet's the internet, you know, and it's funny, even when I was raising my kid and internet was like starting to become a thing, he said, well, Dad, it's online. That doesn't mean that it's real, dude. I mean, you need to decipher information and know what's from where. Even that example alone, you know, now it's gotten worse. Of course, you know, that was, you know, years ago. But now, you know, it seems like people still have this thing where there's, you know, God, if it's on the internet, it's got to be true and this and that. And mysteries have been actually solved in this world that explains it. But for some reason, the internet keeps popping things up of, oh, God, this crazy thing. It seems like every 2 or 3 years, I catch something regurgitated in the news and recycling through again. And a lot of these are just not true at all. So I want to actually do a quick episode on just a couple things that we think that it's a mystery and science has not figured this out. But in reality, science has figured these things out. So join me, if you will. So it seems like there's an actual chemical explanation for why the Iron Pillar of Delhi has not rusted in 1600 years. Not very familiar with the story, but I have heard about it. An iron pillar that has not rusted in 1600 years stands proudly at Qutub Minar, a ruined mosque in northern India. For centuries, the relatively perfect condition of the pillar has fascinated and confused historians, scientists, and archaeologists. However, there's a reason behind this, and it is due to a chemical composition. So the pillar is about 7 meters high and 400 millimeters in diameter at its base, and it was built by hammering multiple pieces of hot iron together to form a cylindrical shape known as forge wielding. Because the process requires numerous selections of steel, the pillar's composition varies greatly. While modern steel holds about the same carbon content as the ancient pillar, the pillar's phosphorus levels are over 10 times higher than modern steels. Experts believe that the high phosphorus content within the ancient steel caused a protective film of, big word here, crystalline iron hydrogen phosphate to form on the pillar's surface, essentially protecting the column from the elements. So here's the thing, despite this revelation, using metals higher in phosphorus isn't recommended for modern structures. The Iron Pillar of Delhi isn't rusting, but is losing ductility, making it too brittle to use in contemporary architecture. So there's goods and bads. Again, I stumbled on this years ago. It was like, why isn't this thing doing something? Well, that's why. And here's another one. And I've heard this even since I was a kid. And it's the stones in Death Valley that are moving by themselves. I'm sure you guys have heard this. California's Death Valley National Park rocks it way up to 500 pounds, travel up to 15 feet in a single minute, seemingly by magic. These rocks, known as the sailing stones, leave trails up to 1,000 feet along the valley's surface, and yet no one has ever actually seen the rocks make their majestic move. Despite the claims that portion of the desert, also called the racetrack, is haunted, and that's the story that I used to hear all the time, there's a scientific explanation for the saline stones movement. According to the National Park rep, no one has ever physically seen these rocks move because you need perfect weather conditions to actually exist for this phenomena to occur. The desert is usually the hottest place on Earth, we all know this, but is still experiencing winter weather at times. So after a rainstorm on a particular frigid winter day, thin sheets of ice can form underneath the massive stones. When powerful storms rip through the valley, the slippery surface allows strong winds to push the heavy rocks hundreds, if not thousands, of feet. Because these weather conditions rarely occur, catching the stones mid-move is almost impossible. However, a remote time-lapse photographer did capture the event on film in 2014. If visitors hope to witness the saline rocks in action, their best option is to visit on a rainy day between December and February. So, there you go. And that was a theory that I've always heard. But again, you know, it keeps like, oh my God, we don't know what's happening here. Here's another one that's kind of a mythos of sort about the Maya civilization. Everybody seems to think that just one day it disappeared and nobody knows why it collapsed and they were erased from the continent. Not true. So by the time the explorers and archaeologists began uncovering ancient Mayan ruins in Mexico and northern Central America during the 19th century, their civilization had almost been forgotten because no recorded history of exact dates or events that caused the civilization's collapse actually existed. Many assumed the Mayan culture met a catastrophic fate and a sudden end. However, the Maya culture still exists, and logical explanations for the gradual collapse of the hegemony present a much less entertaining but convincing argument. After growing intellectually and agriculturally thriving communities throughout the southern lowland regions of Guatemala, Many cities became overpopulated around 900 CE. As political unrest and deforestation practices settled with the region, many Mayans moved outward into the surrounding coastal areas. Historians are unsure why communities continued to disunite the centuries leading up to the Spanish exploration, but agree that a combination of political strain, possible warfare, and economic hardships led to the culture's steady displacement and decline. Spanish conquistadors arrived in the region in the 1500s, and by 1697, they had captured and overrun the Mayans' last remaining large city, Napitin. Many Maya believe that still reside in the present day, reside in present day Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, and El Salvador. So, again, one of those ones that, keeps popping up for some reason. Here's a fun one. Lemmings actually don't throw themselves off cliffs. So, in 1958, Disney produced a documentary entitled White Wilderness, depicting droves of lemmings walking across a snowy cliff and plummeting to their deaths in the ocean below. Though the film sealed the idea of lemmings committing mass suicide in the public mind for decades, experts later revealed that Disney faked the activity shown in the now famous lemming scene. And it is amazing how that has been stuck. It's stuck in my mind all these years of, yeah, just follow like a lemming, just follow off the cliff. It literally, there's phrases, right? So anyway, so check this out. To demonstrate lemming migration in the wild, filmmakers chose a spot in Alberta, Canada, far from the lemming's natural habitat or migration preferences. After purchasing some of the animals from local Inuit children, Disney Studios placed the lemmings on a moving, snow-covered Lazy Susan for dramatic effect, then deliberately threw the rodents over a cliff into the ocean, which was actually a river. Experts who study lemmings in the wild argued that the rodents never intentionally commit suicide. While the animals do experience large population booms, it requires some to relocate every 3 to 4 years. Most of them can swim and are perfectly capable of surviving the passage. Some do die in search of greener pastures, most likely from water wetting their skin, which causes them to drown. However, the final death count is a far cry from the mass suicidal dramas depicted in the 1958 scene. It's just crazy. We will go into this one. So scientists actually can turn lead into gold, but there's a glitch here. Many of you listen to the podcast, I'm sure you've heard us talk about alchemy. I'm sure you know a little bit about it. For centuries, scholars and alchemists hypothesized ways to turn lead into gold. 400 years after polymaths considered the implications and possibilities of creating this magic elixir, scientists proved that they could turn lead and other elements, not just lead, into gold. However, the process really isn't worth the effort. So, to successfully transform one element into another, scientists have to shift the atom's nuclear number to match the amount that the desired element's nucleus contains. All science mumbo jumbo, right? Science can achieve this by radiating elements to drop their excess size, but the product quickly decays and the process is harmful to humans and the environment. In 1924, German and Japanese independent scientists experimented with converting mercury into gold by exposing it to high electrical currents. Because mercury only has one more proton than gold, the element made for a more probable positive outcome than lead, which has three more protons than gold. While successful, the experiment provided mixed results and wasn't widely accepted as a scientific fact. In 1936, scientists began experimenting while bombarding elements with subatomic particles, to turn other elements into gold, and process that proved reliable and successful. So after confirming that mercury, platinum, and bismuth could all be turned into gold, an experiment in 1996 produced the same result from lead. However, the element needs to be subjected to 600 MeV protons, remains radioactive, decays quickly, and ultimately produces such minimal amounts of gold that experts just, it's not really worth it. Yeah, we could do it, but it doesn't make any sense. Anyway, and lastly, I'm going to cover this one, and we've been trying to do an article or a write-up on this, and I just, it's so into the weeds that I really haven't figured out, but this is in regards to Rasputin. Many of you know him. He was a Russian. Some people call him a magic man. Some people called him the man behind the curtain for the whole Russian oligarchy and all that stuff going on, but how he actually died is really where the story goes. That sticks in a lot of people's heads. And we're going to cover it here. So after the Siberian peasant Rasputin briefly attended a monastery and began traveling to offer spiritual healing services, he quickly rose in popularity among Russia's elite. Tsar Nicholas II's wife had a close relationship with the mad monk, they called him, believing that he had the power to heal her only son from hemophilia. The self-proclaimed holy man also established a relationship with Tsar himself, asserting that Nicholas needed to be more confident in his place on the throne and ruler of Russia. Just as the mystique rose in popularity among the Russian court, this mysterious reputation and the supposed powers and influence he held over the Romanovs quickly spread in the media. Soon after, establishing what stories of the mysterious man were true and what were based on myth became increasingly difficult and kind of muddled and merged together. When that war broke out in 1914, many believe Rasputin influenced Russian policy. 2 years later, Prince Felix Yusupov and a group of his supporters collaborated on an assassination attempt. Though Yusupov and his men succeeded, the assassinations added to the already mystical person of who Rasputin was and really exaggerated all their efforts. Yusupov told reporters that he had spent the night feeding the holy man cakes and wine laced with poison, but he never succumbed to the toxic substances. Meanwhile, Yusupov's co-conspirator faked a party on the floor above to keep Rasputin intrigued and cover any noise from the basement, even playing Yankee Doodle on a gramophone. When the poison didn't work, he claimed that he opened the fire on Rasputin to no avail. Even shots at the temple couldn't stop the mystic's beating heart. Finally, after 4 shots to the back, he perished. When Rasputin was found in the river a few days later, a rumor circulated that even the final shots hadn't killed him. Many believed that he had only succumbed to his injuries after hitting the icy water and drowning. While the details surrounding the mystic's death are entertaining, they're also wholly mythical. Autopsy reports demonstrated that coroners didn't find any poison in Rasputin's bloodstream at the time of his death, and that he died from a single gunshot wound to the head. After his passing, his assassins threw him into the water, and officials didn't find Rasputin's corpse until days later. Though this factor added to the mystery, the autopsy reports also claimed that the corpse displayed no signs of drowning. So, there you have it. Again, just some tidbits of things that, we hear, we take and forget. Again, we're so saturated with social media and the internet as it is. Caught a couple of those things, just kind of want to fill them out to go, oh, wait a minute, those lemmings really don't jump off the cliff and kill themselves, and now it's stuck in our psyche forever, as it seems. So, anyway, hope you guys enjoyed that. We will be back with more little tidbits and oddities. Stay strange, everyone. Thank you.